the hour news. As it happens, when it happens, wherever it happens. Local, regional, and global. Only on Q95, the big station. Q95DA.com. Right on cue.
Good evening. This is the Prime Evening News for today, Wednesday, June 22nd. I am your presenter, Jade George. In the headlines, the Peace Walkers of Dominica walked the streets of the city of Roseau again today, this time in solidarity with kidnapped and still missing 12-year-old Kenesha Aiten. Jamaica's team at the Birmingham Commonwealth Games will be chosen using a procedure similar to that of the World Championships and exactly as it was for the Eugene World Championships team. And a powerful earthquake killed at least 1,000 people and injured 1,500 in eastern Afghanistan. Tremors were felt across the border in Pakistan and the search and rescue operations are underway. The Peace Walkers of Dominica walked the streets of the city of Roseau today in solidarity with kidnapped and still missing 12-year-old Kenesha Aiten. As the weeks continue to progress, the Peace Walkers continue to grow in numbers and in their resolve, as Wednesdays have now become accustomed to the waves of white t-shirts, prayers, voices of change, and a call for new unified society. Today's walk now counts as walk number 13. Here is a sample of what transpired today.
I say give me liberty to speak. Or give me death.
Amen.
I will speak my truth, no matter the cost. Amen. Whom the Son of Man have set free, is free indeed.
Amen.
I am free, and I will speak for my homeland. Amen. And in my homeland. Yes. We are ruled by a criminal enterprise.
Yes.
Where wrong is right, and right is wrong.
And that leaves a society without protection. The last institution they have dismantled is the police force. The leadership of the police force has been taken over by the very people, the same people who have dismantled all the other institutions. What's wrong with that picture? So I ask you, what is there to hide? We have a young girl missing. You have a whole police force of over 600 people, and you're still calling on able-bodied people to come and help you look for a little girl? What's wrong with that picture? So I ask you, be not afraid. Not afraid.
So why are you really stopping elderly people that are harmless from walking and praying? All we're doing is walking and praying. No conflict, we just want to speak to the officers. We want to walk in front of a police station and speak to our officers. Because we want justice, and it's the officers that can... The officers that have to administer that first.
And the former CEO of Anguilla Electricity Company Limited, founder and CEO of Davi Business Solutions and senior consultant with the Rocky Mountain Institute, David Gum, says in the Caribbean, the electricity rates have increased 46% from 2015, and that does not seem much for some people as what really means, as what it really means is that a lot is what they are paying on their bills. He spoke on the Global View on Q on Tuesday evening.
In the Caribbean, and our headline in the op-ed said, you know, electricity rates have increased 46% from 2015, that kind of stuff, right? Well, that doesn't mean much for most people. What really means a lot is what they're paying on their bills today, right? And what we have found, all of our analyses and the work that we're doing and the projects that we're working on in the region, solar offers a unique opportunity, even so more now. And that is because of two things. The cost has declined tremendously in the last 10, particularly in the last 5 years. They did go back up slightly, 10, 15% in the last year or so because of the supply chain challenges we're all facing. But that's nothing compared relative to where the cost is today. And I'll put it in some numbers. Where we are in terms of the cost of solar for the region, we're roughly 10 cents per kilowatt hour. There are some who can do it at massive scale, like Jamaica, who can get 6 cents per kilowatt.
He added that there are others who manage to get somewhere between 6 cents and 10 cents. But for smaller islands with smaller grids like Dominica, we are talking about roughly 10 cents.
There are others who manage to get somewhere between 6 and 10. But for smaller islands, smaller grids like Dominica, Anguilla, and you know some of the smaller islands in the region, we're talking about roughly 10 cents. And when I say 10 cents, we don't need to be doing mega projects at 50 megawatts and 20 megawatts or even 10 megawatts. We're talking about projects under 5 megawatts and even at the 1 megawatt scale. So when we talk about Dominica's grid being roughly, I think it's roughly 20 megawatts thereabout, we're talking, if you do a project at 1 megawatt of solar today, it can cost you 10 cents per kilowatt hour. Now, that's just the cost to generate the electricity, all right? You still have the cost to distribute and transmit that electricity, which any given technology will still have. So from a grid perspective, Domlic would still have to transmit that electricity to individuals' homes. But we have an opportunity to make that investment today.
That was former CEO of Anguilla Electricity Company Limited and senior consultant with the Rocky Mountains Institute, David Gums. Co-director of the Rocky Mountain Institute Global South Islands Energy Program and electrical engineer, Dr. Caitlin Bunker, said what she has learned is that each island in the region has its own priorities and lowering electricity costs is the top priority. She was a guest on the Global View on Cue program on Tuesday evening.
What I've learned from working with many different islands in the region is that each island has its own priorities, right? Typically, lowering electricity costs is the top priority. For some islands, increasing their resilience of their energy system is key. For others, high reliability, meaning keeping the lights on all the time, not necessarily in an outage, a shock event, but consistent, reliable electricity all the time. For some islands, it's around environmental sustainability and the impact that they're having towards climate change. For some, it's around local economic development and jobs, right? Typically, we hear a mix of these different priorities, but each island may put one above the other in terms of what's most important to them. So what our program has done is look at each island, work with the stakeholders and the people there to really understand what is most important for them, and then solve for that solution. What type of energy transition would meet their priorities best? And so that looks a bit different in each island, depending on what resources they have, what's going to be best to meet those priorities.
She added that what they have seen in every place is a mix of renewable energy being able to meet those priorities, in particular, lowering the cost of electricity.
Typically, what we've seen every place, though, is a mix of renewable energy being able to meet those priorities, in particular, lowering costs. As David was saying, especially today, with the high costs of fuel that are leading to high costs of electricity for everyone globally, but in particular in the Caribbean, big opportunity to lower those costs by using renewable energy. And we, as a nonprofit organization, aren't, you know, supporting a certain technology over another, but want to find what's the best mix and the best pathway for each specific island to meet those priorities, including lowering costs. So excited to talk about some of the renewable options today and what might look best in Dominica for your priorities.
That was electrical engineer Dr. Caitlin Bunker. Educational consultant Simeon Joseph argues that the number of students who attend school overseas and do not return has changed from being a semblance of reality to becoming an increasingly genuine issue. He added that the real question is why, and he does think that there is an excess of people who have gone to school and do not return.
At one time, it was just a semblance of a reality, but now it is becoming an even more increasingly real phenomenon on the number of people or young people who have gone away to study, who have completed, who have returned and who have not returned. And they hardly come back for some reason or the other. And even so, many people who have gone away to study and have come back and served their due time have left. But the question is why? And there are several questions that can emanate from that situation. Maybe their own personal reasons. It might be financial reasons. It might be lack of opportunities. It might be the fact that we have reached a stage in Dominica where I think we have a glut on the number of people who have gone to study certain disciplines.
He contends that it says something when people arrive in a setting like ours, choose to study a subject like psychology, and then choose not to return when it's scarcely necessary in our culture. He believes that there are a lot of questions that need to be asked on all sides and in the middle about why there is such a big ongoing brain drain in Dominica.
Psychology to me is the greater brain drain, because there's a need for these people in Dominica. But when people, you know, in a landscape like ours, in a climate like ours, an environment like ours, go to study something like psychology and don't come back when it is badly needed in our schools, in societies, by our churches, in our communities, it says something. So, but I think there are many questions to be raised on both sides and even in between as well as to why is it that we have such a fluid, consistent, and massive brain drain in Dominica.
Mr. Joseph goes on to inquire as to why these people aren't coming back and what is that it is preventing them from returning to Dominica and contributing to its development.
I've been in touch with many of the young people whom I know, and I can tell you, when you speak to them, 8 out of 10 will tell you they don't think they're going to come back. That is sad. But the question is, why don't they come back? What is on the other side that attracts them more? And more significantly, what is here that detracts them from wanting to come back to make their contribution to Dominica?
Educational consultant Simeon Joseph. According to Regional Consultant on Education, Innovations, Project Management and Strategic Planning, David Edwards, even if higher education is quite expensive, it is crucial that we reap the rewards of those expenditures both as a state and as a family. He has concerns as to how decisions are made and how priorities are set within a macroeconomic reform strategy.
Bottom line is education is very expensive. We know that tertiary education is even much more expensive, even when tertiary education is supported by the family. There is a contribution that the state made in terms of preparation. So it's very important that we benefit from those investments at a family level, and more importantly, at the level of the state. How are those decisions made? Are the priorities aligned to a macroeconomic strategy for transformation of the economy? That's a very important consideration.
He continued by mentioning nations like Brazil, claiming that they had made significant expenditures in tertiary education, which involved both sending students abroad to pursue research degrees and growing the domestic tertiary education market. Mr. Edwards emphasized that in our situation, we must tie our investing choices to a plan that appeals to a larger audience. There are good reasons for investing in discipline, or more significantly, offering graduates an opportunity to return.
In our case, we need to link our investment decisions to a macroeconomic strategy that has broad appeal. But more importantly, you need to give your graduates a reason to return. Now, in addition to that macroeconomic plan, which would indicate your priority areas for implementation, transformation of your economy, you need to create an environment, an enabling environment. And I have a feeling that one of the issues that dissuade graduates from returning is the absence of an enabling environment.
He stated that once you have been trained, there is a need for the opportunity to improve the skills and knowledge obtained. One won't go back until the surroundings persuade them that they have a chance for a respectable standard of living that converts into employment chances. This promotes a culture of admiration for tertiary skills and education.
You will only return if the environment convinces you that you have an opportunity for a reasonable quality of life. That translates into employment opportunities that are fair, that are transparent. That translates into a culture of appreciation of tertiary skills and education. The policy environment has to be encouraging. So these are very, very important considerations if we want to address the issue of the flight of intellect, the brain drain or the reluctance of graduates to return to the country.
That was Regional Consultant on Education, Innovations, Project Management and Strategic Planning, David Edwards. The National Joint Action Movement, NJAM, wishes to bring to the attention of the people of the Commonwealth of Dominica that today marks the 15th day and beginning the third week since the abduction of 12-year-old Kenesha Etienne and almost 96 hours, 4 days, since Deputy Police Commissioner Lincoln Corbett announced to the nation the death of the alleged abductor Kian Alexander. The deafening silence of the police and the government of Dominica is totally unacceptable, and as a result, NJAM demands that the authorities inform the nation of the situation with the child and what could have led to the death of Kian Alexander, when it was public knowledge and understanding that he had to be apprehended alive, thereby assisting to confirm the whereabouts of the 12-year-old child, Kenesha Etienne. NJAM therefore appeals to the Commonwealth people to join in the efforts to demand an independent investigation into the activities of the police to determine what could have gone so fatally wrong with the handling of the abduction of Kenesha Etienne and the subsequent death of Kian Alexander without locating the child. The police and the government have a responsibility to be transparent and honest and truthful with the nation. NJAM is not a political party, but is proud of confronting political issues of national significance. In this regard, NJAM also appeals to all political parties and their supporters to stop the politicization of the unfortunate situation and to come together in joint action for Kenesha Etienne's sake. A petition to the President of the Commonwealth of Dominica to appoint a commission to investigate the matter will soon be initiated. The entire nation is in pain, and NJAM prays for a miracle to bring the child home safely. The Ministry of Blue and Green Economy, Agriculture and National Food Security and Plant Protection and Quarantine Unit has taken a decision to standardize their hours for inspection of fresh produce for export at the Longhouse Port in Portsmouth. Head of the Plant Protection and Quarantine Unit, Nelson Laville, said the decision taken to implement the new hours of inspection is a result of the increase in the number of non-compliance reports being received by the unit with regards to exported fresh produce from Dominica to regional territories.
We are attempting to put measures in place to reduce the number of non-compliance reports that we've been getting from our trading partners. And when we did our troubleshooting and discussion with agents and along with other partners on the port, one of the things that we've identified is the times for inspections. Persons would come late at night or late, and so inspections would be done but not adequately covered. Then the loading of the boats, etc. All of this creates an opportunity for non-compliance, recontamination of consignments after inspection, and all those different things.
Laville added that one of the actions that the Plant Protection and Quarantine Unit has taken would be to standardize the items or the times for inspection.
So one of the actions that we are taking would be to standardize the times for inspections. So we're looking at this. We had the discussions earlier on with the agents and so forth, and we agreed that inspection times would be from 9 a.m. in the morning until 6:30 p.m. in the afternoon. The inspection will carry on until 6:30, but we'll inspect no consignments which comes in after 6 o'clock. And that is applicable for the port in Portsmouth, at the Longhouse Port.
That was Nelson Laville, head of the Plant Protection and Quarantine Unit. In other news, Jamaica's team at the Birmingham Commonwealth Games will be chosen using a procedure similar to that for the World Championships, exactly as it was for the Eugene World Championships team. Once they have met the qualifying standard and have fit dibs on the Commonwealth Games, the top three will automatically qualify for the World Athletics Championships. According to JAA President Garth Gill, junior athletes who have scheduling conflicts will receive special accommodations at the National Junior Championships.
We go down the ranking accordingly, and those who would have had the higher place are given the preference for selection. This morning, Member Wellington, also president of ISSA, who is here with us at the office, would have informed me that we had 9 such cases, and already arrangements are in place for those student athletes to be able to sit their exam at a school in Kingston. And he would have also had the support and the commitment of Overseas Examination Board in this respect.
Still in other news, search and rescue operations are underway after a powerful earthquake struck eastern Afghanistan, killing at least 1,000 people. Around 1,500 more have been injured as the tremors were felt across the border in Pakistan. South Asia correspondent Avani Deyas tells The World the numbers are expected to get worse in the coming days.
Well, this is just such an awful situation unfolding in Afghanistan. The death toll continues to rise over the last couple of hours, and we know that's going to continue to get worse in coming days as people sort through the rubble and find bodies which have been killed during this earthquake. Now, the earthquake struck late on Tuesday night, early Wednesday morning, local time, but because this is such a remote part of Afghanistan, we're only learning just in the last few hours how bad this earthquake has been. And the situation is really dire as well for the Afghan diaspora, which lives all over the world, including tens of thousands of Afghan people over there in Australia who are trying to get in touch with loved ones. But because mobile connection is down because of this disaster, they're trying to figure out if they've lost people on the ground. Now, we're hearing heartbreaking stories from the few people who have been able to make contact, people saying that they look across at their village and they've lost dozens of family members. One man described it as a mass grave because there are so many bodies. And now the concern is, what is the rescue effort going to look like? The Taliban is not used to dealing with a disaster of this scale, and aid agencies have left in the last year. So it's going to be difficult to figure out how to actually rescue the people who've been affected.
That's the Prime Evening News. Here's a recap of the headlines. The peace walkers of Dominica walked the streets of the city of Roseau again today, this time in solidarity with kidnapped and still missing 12-year-old Kenesha Etienne. Jamaica's team at the Birmingham Commonwealth Games will be chosen using a procedure similar to that of the World Championships, and exactly as it was for the Eugene World Championships team. And a powerful earthquake killed at least 1,000 people and injured 1,500 in eastern Africa. Eastern Afghanistan. Tremors were felt across the border in Pakistan, and search and rescue operations are underway.
Q, top of the hour news.